The meeting, House Transportation Committee will come to order. It's 1:33. It's Tuesday, January 31st. Members present today are Co-Chair Stutes, Representative Drummond, Representative Klayman, Representative Kopp, Representative Newman, Representative Sullivan Leonard, and myself, Co-Chair Wohl. We also have present at the table alternate member Representative Eastman. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. If you could silence your cell phones during this meeting, that'd be appreciated. We're asking anyone who needs to approach the table to or to pass a note or communicate with anyone up here to do through the committee staff, Laura Steidolf, who's sitting over here. I'd also like to thank Heather Evoy from the Transportation Committee Secretary, and Cody Grusendorf from the Juneau LIO. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
we also recognize Representative Rauschers here in the audience. Representative.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just FYI.
Yep, thank you. Thank you. We have Representative Rauscher in the gallery over there. Thank you. We have one bill on the calendar today. Our first order of business, I'd like to bring up HB 60, the Motor Fuel Tax Transportation Maintenance Fund. The intention today is to introduce the bill, answer questions from committee members, and set the bill aside. We will not be taking public testimony during this meeting today. To present the bill, we have Deputy Commissioner of Revenue Jerry Burnett and Commissioner of Transportation Mark Lucan. Online, we have Tax Deputy Director Brandon Spanos, who's here to answer questions as well. So we'll begin our testimony. I guess they're both coming up. If you could identify yourself for the record, that'd be great. Thank you.
For the record, this is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Department of Revenue.
And for the record, Mark Lucan, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
And if it pleases the Chair, I'd like to run through a quick PowerPoint that just describes what the bill does, and then have Commissioner Lucan talk about it. He has another PowerPoint that shows what they plan on using the money for. So
thank you. That'd be appreciated.
House Bill 60 is an integral part of the governor's budget proposal this year, and it's a proposal to increase the motor fuel tax. So with that, I'll go forward. We've had a motor fuel tax in Alaska since 1945, and they've increased over time, but the structure has remained unchanged. The last increase in the highway fuel tax, which is currently 8 cents, was in 1970, the last adjustment. 1970, you may remember that gasoline nationwide averaged about 36 cents a gallon. I remember buying it for $29.9 in 1970, and the median income in Alaska was about $12,500. It brought in in 1971, it brought in $9.4 million. To the state's coffer out of a state general fund budget at that time, which was about $250 million, and a total state budget at that time of about $369 million, including all funds. So just to put it in perspective of where we are now, now we're looking at a tax that brings in $40 million with all the motor fuel taxes in a budget that's more like $4 billion general fund. So just a matter of perspective of where we were, and it's a per gallon charge, not a based on the value, and values change tremendously over time. Go back to 2008 when oil prices were extremely high and Sarah Palin was governor. We suspended the tax from September 1, 2008 to August 31st, 2009. That year, I think we brought in a little over $11 billion in oil revenue, and was not perceived to be a need for the motor fuel tax in that budget year. 2015, House Bill 158 added almost a penny, 0.0095 surcharge on motor fuels and some other refined fuels, which was intended for spill prevention and response fund, goes to DEC. Alaska's fuel taxes are among the lowest in the United States. Our highway fuel is the lowest, and it's been the longest time since an increase. I did include in all the members' packets a report from the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy, you see that the next closest is South Carolina. With the increases in this bill, we would still be below the national average for highway fuel and perhaps slightly above the national average for jet and aviation fuel. Many states don't have marine fuel taxes. The people fill up their boats on the trailer and take it to the marina and launch it rather than having the coastlines that we have. So they don't have a separate category in most states, so they probably, people are paying the motor fuel, the highway use tax on that.
Representative Stutes.
On that point, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. On that point, so you have no idea what, say, some of the southern coastal states are paying in the way of marine fuel tax? I mean, there's got to be. I'm sure that Texas has some, Louisiana has some. Is there any avenue that we can compare what our marine fuel tax is?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, Madam Co-Chair, there likely is. I don't have that data with me today, but I can find that data before your next meeting.
Well, I'd appreciate it if we had at least some remote comparison.
Whatever we can find.
Right, that would be just perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Just real quickly through the chair. Mr. Burnett, what's our average now for gas per gallon in South Central, Southeast area?
I don't know what today's average is. Southeast Alaska, we're close to $3, and in South Central, it's probably in the 260 range. I think the lowest price in Juneau, Alaska right now is 289, and I don't know what the Costco store is in Anchorage, but that's probably your lowest price there.
Follow-up, Representative Sullivan-Liner.
I'm just trying to figure out how you came up with the calculations for how much folks are paying on an annual basis then for the gasoline that you have on your slide number 6.
Okay, the chair, Representative Sullivan-Leonard, when we get to that, that is just the tax portion of it. That is not the total fuel cost on that slide.
Okay.
And we'll get
all
to
right.
that, slide 6, sorry.
All right, that's okay. Thank you.
Okay. So the proposal we have here is to increase the current, this slide shows the current rates for taxation for highway fuels, 8 cents per gallon, marine fuel, 5 cents a gallon, jet fuel is 3.2 cents a gallon, and aviation gas at 4.7 cents a gallon. For someone who buys fuel for use off the road, they can apply and get a credit of 6 cents per gallon. So that would be an industrial user or someone who's just using it maybe on the farm or on their own property, not on state highways.
So this would be for someone who has like a loader or some piece of heavy equipment that does a lot of that kind of work. He could buy diesel fuel. I imagine they fuel up, and probably various ways they can fuel up, but they can apply for a credit for the fuel that they've consumed. Is that how that works?
Exactly, whether it's a personal or an industrial use for that. And that means that they end up paying 2 cents a gallon for that fuel in taxes rather than the 8 cents.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, yeah. Representative McClain.
Through the chair, on that off-road credit, would that, on the personal use, would that mean in communities, Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow, where there might be a lot more snow machine use, is that an area where you might be eligible for this off-road use credit on a personal use basis?
Through the chair to Representative Klayman, I would believe that you would be eligible for that, whether it's worthwhile getting a credit for a small purchase. It would depend on how much you were using, whether it made sense. We do have the Deputy Director of Tax online, and he could probably give us some examples, but you would certainly be eligible for it in some cases.
Follow-up, Representative Clinton.
Through the chair, so this wouldn't be at the pump. You would actually pay the 8 cents at the pump now, or you pay the 16 cents
starting in July under this proposal, and then you'd have to actually go basically provide your receipts and saying, here's how much I bought, here's my use, please give me my refund, and so you'd have to decide how much money were they would get and whether it was worth their time.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Klayman, because this tax is paid at the distributor level, it's not paid by the retailer, it's not added on to the price of your gas at the filling station when you fill up your car with fuel, or your truck or your loader or your snow machine. People are required to apply to the Department of Revenue to get that credit, and so you send your receipts along with the application and get that credit.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, I'm trying to figure out how this goes in my head, and because you could have literally tens of thousands of Alaskans like myself who uses four-wheelers and snow machines, mm-hmm. and I have to send in a credit for my snowmobiles and my four-wheelers for each individual machine, or just the total amount of gas, and what it would take at the state level to deal with that. How many more state employees to try and deal with this credit? We probably all here use a boat or a snow machine or some type of equipment, and I just don't see how that would work.
Through the chair to Representative Newman, I think we probably can report on how much we currently do. We have this credit is in the statute currently. It's not a new credit. It's just a change in the amount of the credit. It may become more important to people as it comes up. And perhaps Brandon Spanos, who's online, could give you a flavor of how many applications we get at this point for credits.
Brandon, are you online?
Yes, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. Through the chair, I believe the question to Representative Newman's question was how difficult is it to administer a refund program for off-road use? Did I get that right?
Yes, I believe so.
So, Deputy Commissioner Burnett stated, the credit has been available for some time, off-road use credit. It's mostly used for mining companies that are using heavy machinery off the road. They file large, substantial credits. We do have some other companies using it for non-taxable use. Most companies can buy fuel, heating fuel tax off, but some buy a tax on and then file for the refund. Occasionally we'll get someone that's using it for a snow machine or a lawnmower. The refund is insignificant, but they do, yes, have to save the receipts and apply for the refund. We don't get very many of those. In 2015, it looks like we issued refunds. Actually, that's not the right. I'd have to run a separate report, but these refunds are not for off-road use that's in our annual report. But I can get those numbers to you. Most of the off-road use, though, is by larger companies. And I did want to mention also that someone asked a question about some of the bush communities. We do have an exemption for some bush communities if the tribe buys the fuel and owns the tank. They can buy a tax off and only pay for fuel that's used on the roads. So anyone in the community could go buy fuel for their four-wheeler or for their snow machine and not pay the tax. If they put it in their boat, they would file a return to pay the tax for the marine fuel.
Okay. I have a question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you. And this is for the Deputy Commissioner, please.
Okay.
I should know the answer to this before I ask the question, but I don't, and I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to ask the question anyway. What would these increase amount be, say, for July 2017, if this tax, all three of these taxes, or any, just pick one of them, were adjusted simply on the inflation rate?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, I haven't done that calculation, and we can do that calculation for you, and it would depend on which inflation rate you want to use, because there are a number of possibilities here and the time frame. I know that if you go back to 1970, the general consumer price index has about tripled. You know, so wage growth has been approximately in Alaska about four times. CPI is about tripled for urban consumers in Anchorage. But if you were doing this, if this had been a percentage of the fuel cost, for example, in 1970, this maybe would have been a 33% tax based on what prices were at that time, because you would 36 cents average price was after the tax was applied. So you go back and a 33% on $2.50 fuel is going to put you well above the 24 cents. Let's put it that way. It'd be more like a dollar, you know, when you get right down to when you compare it that way.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But we can get that, you know, using one of those indexes for you.
We have another follow-up. We have another follow-up, but before that, I want to ask another question on the off-road credit. So I'm gathering that the reason there's an off-road credit is because this motor fuel tax is basically to restore the condition of the services that the state provides that we're depleting by driving on the roads and using airports and ports, and that the logic would be that the off-road vehicles don't really use roads, and therefore this tax that goes to roads shouldn't be paid by off-road vehicles. And as far as Representative Newman's question regarding four-wheelers and snow machines that people use, a lot of people use those recreationally in Alaska. That would be kind of burdensome both to the applier and also to the state to process all these. So I guess my question is there a minimum, or could there be a minimum threshold below which, you know, if you use 50 gallons in your four-wheeler, that it's considered too small of a rebate? Is that something that's been bandied around at all?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware of any such proposal. It certainly does not sound like an unreasonable idea. And some of this, you know, as you suggested, this tax, and especially as the proposal is here, this tax will be designated specifically for roads and airports and harbors, you know, capital, yeah. Direct expenditures upon those things. And historically it has been.
Yeah.
In fact, if you go back, you know, I believe it was a dedicated fund. It may have been a dedicated fund prior to statehood. After statehood, it was separately accounted for a long time. And it's always been separately accounted for, although it was an account within the general fund, except for aviation, which is currently a dedicated fund. So if you look at the proposal for starting July 1st, 2017, it's 16 cents, 10 cents, 6.4 cents for jet fuel, 9.4 cents. And going on to 2018, and bringing it up to 24 cents for highways, 15 cents for marine, 9.6 cents for jet fuel, and 14.1 cents for aviation gas. And the off-use road credits are increased, you know, at the same percentage. It's a 75%, or excuse me, it's
100.
It's the same ratio. Anyway, so that's the proposal, and as you said, it's all to be used for direct expenditures.
Okay, thank you. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for a little bit of latitude on the question here. I appreciate that. So while we're on just some of the off-road stuff, I wanted to cover that. In Section 10, it talks about for use in snow machine vehicles and those types of vehicles deposited into the Transportation Maintenance Fund. Last year, you know, it's been in a lot of the media, the $250,000 for the snow track funds, Governor Walker took those dedicated funds from fees and put it into the general fund. This says that the legislature may appropriate accounts. Does the Department of Transportation, or maybe it's for the commissioner, have you ever put any money that's paid by snow machines and off-road vehicles into the snow machine trails or off-road funds for maintenance? for all the gas that they buy?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Newman, I don't recall that being part a fund source for our department, and therefore it would not be a funded service either, at least not through the Department of Transportation. There may be other departments that receive those funds for that type of activity, but not certainly through the Department of Transportation.
Just to follow up on that for clarification.
So the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, as far as you know, has never appropriated any funds for trail maintenance for snow machines or off-road vehicles for the gas that they buy?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, not state funds. There are federal funds that are set, that are apportioned to the state for trails, trail marking. That happens in primarily in the northern region of the state. But we don't have any a fund source into the department that I know of for snow machine trails in the state, that are funded by those fees.
Mr. Chair, I guess that's my point, is these funds have been collected from people who are snow machiners and stuff for years, and yet that money, they buy a lot of gas that they pay taxes on, and none of that's ever gone into trails, although they have the authority and ability to do that now.
Right. Well, I know that issue will come up, because when we get into where these funds are going and how they're being spent, that will be an issue that will be addressed. Snow machiners that do buy gas can currently apply for a credit, I believe. So some of that money is not being spent on roads. And I know some people on four-wheelers that actually do use roads and the area alongside the roads. So I'm sure they put some wear and tear in the roads. Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, on the off-road use credit, and I guess this would be a question for Commissioner Jerry. I'm sorry, your last name.
It's okay.
But the intent of off-road use, would it be easier, because as was pointed out by the chairman, a lot of recreational users drive 100 miles to get to the place where they're going to use the recreational trails. So would it be more consistent with the bill sponsor's intent if we said an off-road use credit would apply to anybody that's in a community that does not have Division of Motor Vehicles regulation of their road? In other words, if your vehicle count is 500 or less, and there's a very finite number of communities that actually fall under DOT and DMV that are off the state road system, and there, Mr. Chairman, those vehicles are primary transportation, and that might be more consistent. I'm just wondering if that would be consistent with the bill sponsor's intent, is if those are the people we're trying to get the credit to, folks that are not on a DOT or a DMV-regulated road system, versus any recreational snow machine.
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, I'm going to answer that kind of in a negative manner, which is that the intent of the sponsor, the governor, in this case, is to increase the fees and to use those increases specifically for the purposes in the bill, which are the roads, the direct maintenance expenditures for roads and highways and public safety, and for harbors and airport facilities. So from that, it would be reasonable to infer that you're answering it correctly, but I don't.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the next page, the next slide here is just giving some examples of how much tax people pay under the current system and under the proposed system. And I'm using an example of the Matsu commuter that drives Anchorage every day, and in their SUV gets 15 miles a gallon, uses about 1,600 gallons of fuel per year for that purpose. And right now they're paying about $133 in taxes on that fuel. With the doubling of this, it would be $266. And with the next increment in 2008, it would go up to $399, approximately $400 a year in tax. So, that's about, a dollar and 50 cents or so a day for driving to work at the top rate. And currently it's under a dollar a day. The next one, just to to put it, you know, increases in freight costs. And I'm using an example of hauling 30,000 pounds of freight between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and I'm assuming just a one-way trip. So, you know, we have people from the trucking industry here that can talk about what kind of fuel economy they get and, you know, can have other discussions with you and whether they have to bring the truck back empty. And so it could have different impacts. But assume they use the 72 gallons, all 30,000 pounds of freight. Right now they're paying 2 cents in tax per 100 pounds of freight. And with the ultimate increase to this, it goes up to 6 cents in 2008 for hauling 100 pounds of freight. Marine fuel, and this is a number that I actually got from one of the members of your committee in my discussion, using 3,000 gallons as a commercial fisherman in the summertime. There's fishermen that use lots more than this and fishermen that use less than this. And but just as an example, someone uses 3,000 gallons of fuel in their boat, paying $150,000 currently, with the increases going up to $300 worth next summer and $450 the next one. And the jet fuel, that's, you know, I'm not sure how, you know, we've got companies that use millions of gallons. We've got companies, so I just used a round number here at 100,000 gallons. And you can see that they're paying $3,200 now, and they'd be paying $9,600 with the ultimate increase in this bill. Aviation gas, if you're a weekender and you use 1,000 gallons in a year, and you're paying $47,000 worth of, $47 worth of taxes now, you'd be paying $141 worth of taxes. So just a set of examples here. And you can extend those however you want. Many people use more fuel and others use less. So,
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, through the chair. Deputy Commissioner Burnett, can you tell me the difference between aviation gas and jet fuel?
You want the chemical analysis?
No,
or
thank you. Give me the 50,000 foot level. That's about what I'll understand.
Jet fuel is very much like diesel fuel. It's a distillate product that is typically, I think, taxed at a lower rate because it was used in larger quantities than aviation gas in more recent years. And I think these tax rates come from it's a long history of how we got to them. The aviation gasoline is used in reciprocating type engines primarily. And so it's usually the smaller planes. You know, turboprops and jets use the jet fuel. And typically are larger planes and more fuel consumption.
Follow up,
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. To clarify that just a little bit, so the smaller planes, like the privately owned planes, would use the aviation gas?
Typically, yes.
And like Alaska Airlines or Delta would be using the jet fuel?
Or many of your commuter airlines.
Raven, that type?
Right. Tourism planes in Juneau typically are turboprop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does it go on the engine type, or does it go on the seating capacity, or?
It's the type of fuel that's used, and it is based on the type of engine that's being used is the type of fuel that would be used in it.
Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so turboprops and jets, the jet fuel tax would be paid whether it's a passenger plane or a cargo plane. For example, Anchorage's most of Anchorage's traffic is cargo.
Through the chair to Representative Drummond, that's correct. However, there are exemptions for some of our foreign flights, flights where they originate or end in another country, they may be exempt from tax at the international airport. Those are primarily cargo planes that are in that. And, you know, Anchorage is the one of the very largest cargo airports in the United States, actually one of the largest in the world, sometimes in the top 10 in the world. And those cargo planes use a lot of fuel there. A fair amount of it is exempt from tax, but they pay a lot of landing fees. So it's a balance there that you have to look at for the, and all the funds from these planes have to be used at the airport.
Okay, so taxes collected on cargo fuel, on fuel used for cargo jets, would be used at, could only be used at the airport. So it's up to the airport to decide whether they need additional revenues, or if they're meeting their revenue need in the other ways through landing fees and so on.
To the chair, I don't know that I would answer the question exactly like that, but I think that is one of the balances in having an exemption for cargo planes, is that they are paying a lot of other fees and providing a lot of economic activity.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. One second. I just have a follow-up on that question as well. So you're delineating cargo. You're not taxing the cargo freight people and the airports. That's a state decision. That's not a they have an exemption. Can you explain that exemption? Because does that have to do with their country of origin?
To the chair, as I understand it, and we've got the deputy director of tax online, there is a state exemption for, and it's not for cargo flights, it's for flights originating in or going to another country.
Is that similar to an Alaskan goes to buy something in Maryland and you say, I'm from Alaska, and they don't charge you sales tax?
Something like that.
Okay.
But it isn't to cargo planes specific. It's
right.
For flights. It could be a passenger plane.
Country of origin.
But it's country, it's other countries, a foreign fleet. And there was something else in your question there. It is a state exemption, but having said that there's a state exemption, there are also ways that they have the ability, as I understand it, to buy fuel elsewhere, bring it in, and use it untaxed in any event. So,
like at a duty-free shop or something.
Right. So it's a complicated problem and not one that's addressed in this bill.
Okay. Did you want to add something, Commissioner Lucan?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, all I would add is that, you know, just to clarify, you know, because many of the aircraft, cargo aircraft, country of origin is the United States. So it's really the origin of that specific flight. So if it originates in a international location and comes to Anchorage, or it departs Anchorage and goes to an international location, those flights are exempt from the fuel tax.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Solomon Leonard. Sorry.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Burnett, I'd like to go back up to the highway fuel slide here, the column where you've discussed 25,000 miles at 15 miles per gallon equal to 1,666 gallons. And that whole premise there, I think you stated that you used some of the numbers based on the MATSU commuters. Did you also look at other areas, Fairbanks, Juneau, for any other numbers associated with that type of a
Through the chair to Representative Sullivan Leonard, I wanted to use an example instead of multiple examples, but if a person in, you know, people in Juneau may only use, you know, depending on where they live, or people who live in Anchorage may drive much less than 10,000 miles a year in their car for a variety of reasons. But if a person's working in MATSU, this is a person who has to drive back and forth, and that was why I was using that as an example. Not
follow up.
And if I could follow up on that. Can you give me an example on the cost of what it would be then for 30,000 commuters coming from the Matsu Valley going to Anchorage back and forth annually?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, it's a math problem, and so yes, I can give you that information.
Okay.
Where it would come at. Yeah.
Sorry, through the chair. My point on this, sir, is that when you look across the state, the large number of commuters that we have across the state, the mass of that is in Matsu Valley. We are an incredible employment source for Anchorage. Used to be for the North Slope. We don't have that as much at this point. But my point is, it will be very burdensome on our Matsu residents. And I know maybe I shouldn't just pinpoint Matsu, but I think it's important to do so. Because we don't have that reverse where Anchorage is commuting to Matsu. We have 30,000 people that commute every day. Mm-hmm. We are the workforce that comes into Anchorage. So, you know, my mindset is, you know, as you look at an increase of 100% for the first year for 2017 and another 200% increase with the motor fuel, who's going to be affected? And it's going to be my residents, and it will be significant. Every penny, I think, is very detrimental, and especially when they're working hard to provide, you know, employment pieces for their family. So, anyway, I wanted to make a point on that.
Thank you. Representative Clement.
I want to go back to the exemption for foreign fly or aircraft that are flying to foreign airports. As I understand it, the tax is only what gets pumped into the planes in Anchorage, or Fairbanks, mm-hmm. for that matter, through the chair. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct.
And then further follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Clement.
So the taxes, if the destination of the plane, whether it's a China aircraft or a FedEx aircraft or UPS aircraft, if the plane is in Anchorage flying to Hong Kong, then they wouldn't pay that jet fuel tax. But if the very same airplane was flying to Louisville or to Seattle, whether it was China Air or whether it was UPS, that same plane, because now they're going within the U.S., they then would pay that aviation fuel or the jet fuel tax.
Through the chair, to Representative Clement, I believe that's correct.
And then further follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Clement.
My memory from earlier conversations was that part of the reason that there's not the charge for flying to foreign airports is that's not just a state exemption. It's actually required by federal law. There's a federal statute on... I'm seeing Mr. Lucan nod his head that it wasn't just our goodwill. It was actually the FAA came in and said pretty much you can tax all you want when you're flying within the U.S., but when they're flying to foreign airports, you can't collect that tax.
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, that is correct. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, because that's questions on a lot of our minds about the exemption and the fact that it's international, has an international leg on it, and that applies to cargo like UPS, FedEx, also passenger as well. Okay.
And then actually one last, unrelated to aviation.
Okay. One last, no, go ahead. Representative Clayman.
Representative Sullivan Leonard was asking some questions about the cost to Matsu drivers, but isn't part of the theory of the fuel tax, both on a federal level and for the state level, is it trying to create a cost user, cost payer type analysis, so that although certainly if I commuted once a week to Fairbanks, or I was flying driving back and forth to Fairbanks, I'd use more fuel, I'd also use the highways more and presumably wear the asphalt out more because I was driving on it more. And so even though those that buy more fuel and driving on the roads are actually using the roads more, they're getting very much benefit of what they're spending, because they're getting roads that get maintained, and we have that money available for federal dollars to make those construction matches. Am I missing something, or is that...
No, through the chair, to Representative Clayton, that's exactly the point of this bill, is to have people, users, actually pay a portion of the cost of the infrastructure that they're using.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the question regarding cargo jets or passenger jets flying between foreign ports ought to be, how much in taxes are they paying when they fuel up at those foreign ports? Mm-hmm. I think it would be really interesting to know, and not necessary for this conversation, but I think that ought to be considered as to whether they get exempted or not. But that may not be within our control, because it sounds like it's an FAA rule rather than a state managed rule.
Representative Newman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jerry, does FedEx and UPS pay the tax then?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, it depends on which of their planes and where they're flying to and from.
Yeah. Okay, we can proceed. We got a lot to cover today, so I'll
okay,
just keep going.
The revenues from this fund go into the Transportation Maintenance Fund as a new fund and a general fund, except aviation fuel taxes, which are currently other funds. They're dedicated as required for participation in a federal program under current law and under our Constitution. They can be dedicated. House Bill 60 moves the taxes on highway and marine fuel from undesignated general fund to designated general fund for budgetary purposes. And the purpose of that is to create confidence that revenues from motor fuel will be used to build and maintain transportation infrastructure. The revenue impact, it's approximately, there's a fiscal note with the bill, but it's about $40 million the first year, about $80 million per year thereafter. The first year about, when it's fully implemented, about another $400,000 of that will be shared with municipally owned airports because, as we've mentioned, aviation fuels have to stay in the airports and in the system where they're generated. The remainder of this goes to the Transportation Maintenance Fund, special accounts for road, water, transport, and aviation facilities. The estimates were based on the fall 2016 revenue forecast, and it does not account for changes in fuel demand or stockpiling. You know, we're assuming a fairly steady demand for fuel in Alaska. Fuel demand goes up and down, and I provided many of you with a copy of the motor fuel portion of our annual report. It shows how many gallons in each of the last several years, and I can be happy to provide that to the committee officially also. But stockpiling, you know, if you are a big retailer and you know that the tax is going up on July 1, you may buy a little extra fuel in June and make sure your tanks are full. And that would allow, you know, to avoid the tax and probably pass it on to your customer too. But
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner, as you might guess, I'm curious as to know the definition of what water transport is, and particularly in view of the fact that the state has turned over the majority of harbors to local municipalities. I'm curious as to what that is, and I'm also curious as to what the special account would qualify, special accounts for roads, what qualifies under that category.
If I could, I'd let Commissioner Wu can speak to the water, you know, the where this is fits in the budget and how it's being used.
Well, I was going to show this in my briefing, but I guess I can talk to you. I'll give you the numbers now, and then we can talk specifically, Madam Chair. Right now, the funds will be identified for roads and airport, basically road, airport, and then there is a small portion that's dedicated to the marine highway system. And so that's, I think, what it means when it says water transport, that there's a chunk of these funds that will actually go into the marine highway system fund.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
When you say a small portion, is that small portion equivalent to what the marine fuel tax increase would be?
Through the chair, I would have to look and see what the expectation is for revenue from the marine tax, but I know that the marine highway system fund is, or the money oriented to that is roughly $2.5 million.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Thank you. I would be interested in knowing what the anticipation potential, and I understand these are all ballpark figures, but what the increased revenue would be as opposed to what the marine highway might expect to receive or have accounted for in their budget.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. No problem.
We can do that. I just have a couple of real quick slides left, and then I'll turn this over to Commissioner Lucan for his presentation. We've got a few things to implement this because it's changing the rate on an existing tax. It's a one-time implementation cost of $50,000 with no additional ongoing costs. And that's my presentation, and if we can get to yours. It should be right behind that one.
Thank you.
You can move them if you want.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead. So, if it pleases the chairs, we want to just talk a little bit about where these funds will go, and that's really what the scope of this briefing is. It's really the funds that are generated by the motor fuel tax are going to be placed into the Alaska Transportation Maintenance Fund, as Commissioner Burnett mentioned, which is a DGF or other fund, and it will replace an equal amount of unrestricted general funds that will come out of our budget, and so that's really what you're seeing up here, is that roughly $64.8 million of UGF will be replaced with the earnings from this proposed tax. It will go into a designated fund. We also swap about $4.5 million of designated general fund or unrestricted general funds with designated general funds in the aviation account. So the total swap is roughly, up there, $69.3 million for the Department of Transportation's budget. I think you'll recall that Commissioner Burnett mentioned the fact that it's roughly $80 million. There is a portion of this these funds that will go to public safety as well, and then also to the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development. And I don't have those breakdowns, so we're just going to focus on DOT right now. I'll draw your attention to the upper right of this slide, those two pie charts, and really what that reflects. The farthest right is our management plan. Those are the funds sources for our budget, for our operating budget. Roughly 51% is other, 37% is UGF, and 11% is direct designated general fund.
Sorry, we go ahead. I'll let
with
you
the fund source swap, that designated general fund portion increases pretty considerably, and you can see it replaces the unrestricted general fund piece of our budget.
Thank you. So basically, the total stays the same. You're getting more from DGF, which is derived from this increase in tax, less from the UGF. So ostensibly, the legislature has to allocate less money to DOT and to keep you at the same amount.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Right. Representative Newman.
That's basically the nutshell, Mr. Chair, that's going at. But and then the question that just comes to mind, though, Commissioner, is we continue to talk about we need further reductions, whether it's the governor or legislators. It seems like the first thing you say is first thing we need to do is further reductions within the operating budgets. Does this match reductions in your operating budget?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there are reductions in our operating budget, and I don't have last year's total, but $581,260,000 of total budget for our operating budget is less by, I think, roughly $5 million, but I don't know exactly the exact numbers, but I think roughly $5 million than what was in our total budget last year.
So the bottom line of that was no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'll proceed.
If you could go back real quick, the bubble chart really reflects those fund sources, the portions of those fund sources for our 2018 budget. So on the right, starting with CIP receipts and then working your way down kind of into that tail, those are all the funds that make up the other fund portion of our operating budget. The unrestricted general funds, the blue ball, is that portion, the 25%, and then the two funds underneath are the one is the new designated fund, the Alaska Transportation Maintenance Fund, and then the highway, the Marine Highway System Fund, which already is in existence. Those are also reflect our new budget or the DGF portion of our budget. This slide just shows you that, you know, we have reoriented our focus as a department toward the service that we deliver, and those services can be wrapped into four core services: preserve, operate, modernize, and provide transportation services. And you have seen this briefing, I think, as a committee saw it last week. The point that I would make in this, on this particular slide, though, is other than modernize Alaska's transportation infrastructure, the state is primarily responsible for funding the other three services that we provide: preserve, operate, and provide transportation services. And I want to just talk about two of those because that's where the bulk of this fund source swap, these designated general funds, will actually be going to help offset the cost of providing these services to Alaskans. So under preserve, that's the definition there, but it's primarily to ensure the life of the and sustain the life of our transportation infrastructure, and the direct services that support the preserve core service are surface preservation, off-service preservation, bridge preservation, vehicle management, and vessel marine management, vessel terminal management. And so I want to just give you an example of one of those direct services. Go ahead, Terry. I'm sorry, here's the entire budget. So we have broken out what we spend, and this is FY17 numbers, not FY18. But this is what we have determined that we spend for this particular service across the state. And you can see how that's broken out between unrestricted general fund, designated, and then other. Go ahead. So here's, again, just an example. But I can tell you that, as you saw last week, for every one of these direct services, we have identified exactly what we spend. Off-surface preservation is primarily things like brush cutting, drainage, ditching, and you can see these funds are going to be used to maintain those, that service. And you can see, if you know, we're targeting certainly the left-hand side pictures, but again, if we aren't funded correctly and we aren't able to deliver that service, then we fall more toward the right-hand pictures. But the other important piece that I would offer is that, you know, we are also measuring our performance and measuring how well we're in utilizing these funds. And so I guess my commitment to you is that, you know, we will be accountable to Alaskans, to you as our investors, for these funds that, that you're investing in this department.
Does, I know about the federal funding formula for new construction. Does that apply? What applies to resurfacing, say, repaving an existing road?
Well, and actually that's kind of reflected in that other piece of the bar chart.
Right.
You know, we have worked with our federal funding partners to help us determine that certain activities that we do to preserve our system are actually eligible for federal funds, and so that's what you see reflected in here.
Okay, thank you.
The second core service that we provide that is also primarily funded with state funds, whether it's UGF or DGF or other, is the operate, and that's all of those things that help us move people and goods across the system. So under that is illumination, snow and ice removal, operate, certificate of airports, striping, signage, signals, and information transportation services. Again, another example. Well, first of all, here's our operate budget, roughly what we spend. You can see that primarily right now, the vast majority of that is UGF. With this fund source swap, that UGF number will get smaller and the DGF number will get bigger, you know, purportedly for the 2018 budget. Again, just an example, snow and ice removal. I've talked to some of you about this. We spend roughly $74 million annually. You can see how that's broken out. And again, we're measuring our performance in our ability to meet our targets for snow and ice removal. But again, this is the kind of activity that this fund, this new Alaska Transportation Fund, will help fund.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, when we look at the, I'm on page 9, the operating budget, your current management plan, 71% UGF, how much of that money goes towards marine highways and how much goes towards highways?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, under operate, so under the operate core service, it's primarily for horizontal surfaces in our system, whether that's highways or aviation. Where you'll see the marine highway budget reflected is under the core service provide transportation services. That's where the bulk of our funds, whether it's UGF or designated funds, that portion of our budget goes under the provide transportation services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe the department could provide the what fund sources or how much they're funded at different the ferry systems, marine highway, and highways and airports.
Sure.
If they don't.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I assume that snow and ice removal of approximately $74 million, that's removing snow and ice from roadways as well as all those small rural airports. Snow, I assume. Ice, it's kind of hard to remove ice from a runway if it's gravel.
Through the Chair, Representative Drummond, that's correct. Mm-hmm. You know, it is the activity that we use to, you know, to clear snow and ice from horizontal surfaces, whether it's airports or roadways.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopp.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Luke and I had the privilege of sitting down with Representative Tallarico on snow and ice removal in his district, and he said for the first time he actually was overwhelmed with compliments on DOT getting the road cleared timely and swiftly, and he said that it is noticeable. I wanted to make sure that was passed along to you, because I know you hear the negative a lot.
Well, thank you, Representative Cobb. All right, next slide. Just the final slide. This is really just a summary, again, to point out that this is not an increase in our operating budget. It's just a swap from unrestricted general funds to designated general funds, and that shows you, that reflects roughly the percentages that our budget would be funded by either designated or unrestricted general funds should this bill pass.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I'm sure we'll have some questions from the committee. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the Chair. Commissioner, I had an opportunity to speak with Captain Newsell in my last committee meeting, which was the subcommittee meeting for DOT, and I want to ask you the same question. I know there's some significant issues with the funding directly relating, which directly relates to the scheduling of the Alaska Marine Highway System. Do you believe it would be an advantage, and an advantage to the both the Marine Highway System as well as the state, insofar as solid revenue generating or a relationship with solid increased revenues, if we were to be able to, if the Marine Highway System were forward funded, say for 2 years, which would allow you to put out a solid, dependable schedule, of course, other than weather.
Through the Chair, Representative Stutes, I think, you know, and maybe, you know, Deputy Commissioner Newsell mentioned this, but anytime you get into uncertainty in transportation, that's definitely not a benefit. You know, it creates a lot of you know, potential downfall for whether it's the user or the indirect recipient of those services. And so anytime we can insert certainty into a transportation system, you know, and certainty in funding, I think you're going to actually see improved service and certainly potential impacts to businesses that are either direct or indirect recipients of that schedule, that certainty.
Follow up?
Follow-up, Representative Stutz.
So I'm guessing the answer is yes. It would. You believe it would be a significant improvement to the dependability of the Alaska Marine Highway System, as well as a very potential increase in revenues.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Stutz. Questions? Representative Newman.
Back to the bill a little bit. How were the rates set and increases in the tax? How were those decided?
Through the chair, to Representative Newman, the ultimate rate here was intended to be close to the, for highway fuels, is intended to be close to the national average, and also to cover a, you know, a set percentage of DOT's costs within this. So with the 24-cent highway fuel tax, that puts the state right just a little bit below the national average tax rate. And so rather than going from 8 to 24, the decision was made to step it from 8 to 24 over a two-year period. But it keeps it below but near the national average cost.
A couple follow-ups on that.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, then, so are those rate increases proportionate to the money that's currently spent? The commissioner said that this money in the highway maintenance fund would supplant UGF dollars that currently go towards those maintenance. So are these tax increases proportionate to the money that's going there now, so that we don't have one that's getting more than the other? Did you take those numbers, and is it equal, so that the money that they were getting, the FY17 management fund for highways, for aviation, for marine, now you've got this tax, you're increasing it. Is it the same proportion amount of money so that the people who are paying those taxes are getting that money back proportionately?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I don't believe that it works out exactly proportionately that way, but in each case, the amount of tax generated is significantly less than the total expenditures in those areas.
Again, Mr. Chair, they increased the tax, but the reason they did this was to supplement the UGF funds, so the taxes pay that. But yet the tax increases that they've got aren't proportionate to the same amount of money that was going to what they were doing.
I understand. I also understand, if I'm correct, tell me, that the current motor fuel tax structure, whatever the tax, 8 cents for motor road tax and marine and so on, at the current structure, none of that is actually designated to airports, roads, or ports. So is that correct?
Through the chair, the representative, to the chair, actually. Mr. Chair, aviation fuel taxes are 100% dedicated to use on airports due to federal regulations that require that they are. And so they are actually act like a dedicated fund, which is allowable under our Constitution for uses required by a federal, for participation in federal programs, is what it says in the Constitution.
But, for example, motor fuel tax at 8 cents a gallon, which it's been since 1971, that goes into the general fund, and then the DOT gets money from the general fund.
If I could, each of those taxes is currently separately accounted for within the general fund. And so, well, they're getting money directly, you can account for how much of the expenditures would have been paid for by that tax. And for a harbor, for the marine tax, that goes into a special fund, and that special fund has, in my experience, been used for those purposes. There is a connection already. Okay. This makes that connection tighter,
right,
and takes it out of the general fund for budgetary purposes, the unrestricted general fund for
and
budgetary.
Although there is a connection, and what Representative Newman, I think, was getting at is that the connection isn't proportional. It's just how it's been historically. These numbers were determined at different times with different sort of metrics involved, and if it was 8 cents in 71 and then it's 8 cents in 2013, obviously the cost of maintaining the road miles, the lane miles, mm-hmm. in Alaska has gone up quite a bit more than
the amount of
revenue you're getting out of
it. In the 1971 budget, there was 9.4 million dollars in motor fuel tax, highway motor fuel tax in the Department of Highways budget, and there was $9.8 million of unrestricted general fund.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we look in Section 2, it calls for changes in the per-gallon tax rate for dealers, and it gives us tax rates. And we'll just look at the marine fuels and aviation gases, but then in Section 3, it's a change in the tax rate for users. And the tax rate increase for dealers is different than the one for users. Why? You would think that if the dealer is getting a tax, the state increases the tax so much that they would be the same amount posed over. And I'm just going off your section analysis for other members, bullet points number 2 and 3.
Mr. Chair, I'll have to find that. I'm not sure that the taxes are paid at the distributor level, and the users simply pay what the cost of the fuel at the retail. So
the retailer,
if there's an error in the sectional analysis or the way it's being read, I could.
So the retailer's not collecting nor paying out taxes. It's all happening at the wholesale level.
We need some clarification on that, Mr. Chair, because that's not what their sectional analysis
says differently. There may be something incorrect in there.
We'll get answers on that, I guess.
Okay, thanks.
Chair.
Representative Eastman, this is a seven-member committee, and you're an alternate, so we're allowing you to sit at the table, but to keep the balance consistent, you're not a questioning member of this committee. You can submit questions in writing. I'm sure we'd be happy to take them. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kopp?
In summary, thank you, commissioners, for that presentation. This creates for the first time a transportation maintenance fund. Is that right? Because we've had these dedicated funds accounted for in the general fund, which you've mentioned.
Through the chair to Representative Kopp, for the purposes of highway motor fuels, this creates a non-general a fund outside of the unrestricted general fund, still within the general funds per se, that's designated for use for this purpose. There is existing right now an account within the unrestricted general fund which identifies the revenues from these taxes. So, yes.
Sure.
Follow-up, Representative Kopp.
With the creation of this fund, would it be better able to track where the monies are going to address the proportionality question that Representative Newman? Is it easier to track once you put it into a fund of this nature for statistical data gathering purposes?
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, for the purpose of identifying it within the budget for budgetary purposes, this makes it easier to track. And because otherwise, DOT's budget looks like it's unrestricted general fund, even though it may be paid out of a highway maintenance account within the general fund. And this specifies that it's in this other fund, so in the budgetary documents it shows it as a different fund source at the high level.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, I would like to point out in the bill itself that they are different numbers in Sections 2 and 3.
We'll seek some clarification on that. Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside. And with that, this meeting will be adjourned at 2:41, and we will take this bill up at our next meeting, I believe.